course, bouncing back and forth emails, that kind of thing. I finally was able to like squeeze some time into my show. By the way, I actually do try to squeeze people in the show as much as I can. Some interviews run long. Other people don't do the interviews when they say they're going to do the interviews, but yada, yada, yiddy. I was like, okay, let's get Annie Shawn here. This looks like a great thing to talk, to chat about, and for, you know, people to get involved with, especially getting their kids into music, right? That's a whole other podcast or chitty chat that I want to have with other people about, you know, if you want to get things moving again in the music wise, as far as like getting people, as far as going out to clubs and shows, you got to get new generations of people playing music, and that's the kids. The kids got to get some more creativity in them. You got to get them going, and this is a great thing that they put on, right? So, the Hamilton Music Collective is like, you know, let's get the kids learning about music and having fun. So that, this is awesome. This kind of fits into everything. So, after fumbling around on Zoom, of course, Annie and I were able to have a chat and promo it, and even make some jokes about Prince. Well, I did, really. But here's Annie Shaw. My next guest is Annie Shaw. She's doing something, Gunnar. Why don't you just get it right? Hamilton Music Collective is hosting their monthly open jam event for kids at the Gasworks in downtown. So it's happening Saturday, May 28th at 1 p.m. Joining me right now via Zoom, pre-recorded, Annie Shaw.
Hi.
I know you have the giggles now because we've tried this 22 times already, but this is how it rolls sometimes. Wait, you should come on the show when it's live. It's even worse.
Oh my gosh.
It's all live. Tell us about what's going on with the open jam with the kids, the event.
Well, this is a really awesome event, and I think everyone needs to know about it because it's so much fun. We have an open stage going on, and we invite any, kid. I don't know how old are kids, like up to 16 or 17, any age really.
You and, have them. I don't. I have a dog.
Dogs are welcome too. Sure. But anyway, so you come on down and you sign up for a spot on the stage. You write down like what you're going to play. You can play a song by yourself, or the fun part is that I'm there with my my bandmates, and we are your backup band if you want. So sometimes kids come and they're like, I really want to play Smells Like Teen Spirit on the drums. And we're like, we got you. Oh. And we go up on stage and we got like a guitar player and a bass player, and I'm on the keys. And sometimes someone pulls up the lyrics on their phone and sings along. Anyways, it's pretty casual, but it's just like, it's so much fun for everyone. And the kids get really excited because they get to play a song with a full band if they want. So,
and I believe the purpose of this is to encourage kids to pick up an instrument and enjoy being a little creative, especially after 2 years of COVID, not being able to like get that energy out and learn something new.
Exactly. And you know what? Live performance is such a motivating thing for kids who are learning an instrument on their own, like maybe in their bedroom, and to step outside and get to play for an audience. That's so exciting. And as a music teacher, I use that as a teaching tool for my kids all the time. I say, okay, we got to get this song ready because we're going to play it in front of people. And they're like, oh, okay, well, let's get this done. It's really, really good.
So the age groups that that will come down to this event, you've done this before over the last couple of years, right?
That's right. Yeah, we've been doing this for at least, I want to say, 4 or 5 years. Okay. Of course, we had to stop for COVID for quite a while, actually. And we've only been doing two since we've been back. So we had one at the end of April. And then this will be our last one for the school year. And we take a break for summer, but then we'll be back in the fall. So the last Saturday of every month. So, yeah.
What's the feedback you get from the parents on this one? Like, is it with this open jam, you get kids that you're always teaching anyway show up, but are there new kids and parents showing up and then afterwards going, okay, I really enjoyed that?
Yeah. Yeah. We get a lot of, I love it when we see people that I've never met before that have heard of this event, and they say, how, this is such a unique event. I haven't seen anything like this in the city. And the kids just, the kids afterwards, they're just glowing. It's so rewarding to see. Yeah.
Has there been any moments where you kind of looked at a kid and went, Oh my God, this guy's really good, and I kind of feel inferior to their playing at this point.
All the time. It's amazing how much talent is on our stage. It's amazing. Like, I'm like, who are you? Oh, okay. Don't be shy. No, don't be shy. Go ahead. Maybe you're gonna play like Mary Had a Little Lamb on the piano. And they're like, no, they play this masterpiece, this song they've written and composed lyrics for. Anyways, it happens all the time.
I
Oh
know
no.
this is why I couldn't be a music teacher, because it's not that I feel threatened, but I do kind of feel threatened, because if I was up there and I was just like, these kids come, okay, we're gonna do Nirvana, or we're gonna do this, and then some little kid comes up all slyly and then just does something, and it's just like, well, wait a minute, where did you learn that? I listen to a lot of Prince. I'm like, okay, get off the stage. I don't need you to make me feel bad as an instructor, you know. I got all these other people here, and now you've listened to Prince your entire life, and you're only 8, and you're this good, you know? Like, you're a prodigy. Okay, cool.
Yeah, okay, cool.
I would just find that so humorous to see this little kid slide up dressed as Prince, and you looking down on him, and he counts you in, and you're just like,
Oh
what
my
is going
God.
on here? You know, it's kind
That
of
would be
intimidating.
very exciting. I hope that happens to us at this open mic.
Saturday, May 28th, 1 p.m. at the Gasworks. Where is it located? Where does everyone go, and how do they sign up?
Yeah, so the Gasworks is a community hub building downtown. It's just kind of off of Cannon Street on Park Street. So in between like Mulberry and Cannon. Park Street's just a couple blocks west of James. And yeah, it's just this kind of like this hidden gem. It's a beautiful building with a really nice theater space, newly renovated actually. So come on down and see it.
Okay.
Lots of parking in the back when the road is open. Sometimes at this weekend, actually, the road will be. Oh no, sorry. Yes,
This.
actually, I should mention the road on the 28th. The road will be closed, so you have to find parking elsewhere. Minor detail, but yes.
Well, I think everyone should hit up the website. What's the website?
Yeah, so hamiltonmusiccollective.ca is our website, and we have lots of information on all our programs there. You can find Open Jam for Kids if you scroll down in the programs tab. Yeah, all the
Okay,
information there.
well, you heard it there, folks. The roads are closed, so maybe that'll stop that little Prince kid from showing up, making everyone
No.
feel very uncomfortable.
Come on, Prince kid. Come visit us.
Annie, thanks for the chat.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
I'm gonna fight them all. A seven nation army couldn't hold me back. They're gonna rip it off. Taking their time right behind my back. And I'm talking to myself at night because I can't forget. Back and forth through my mind behind a cigarette.
Okay, once again, Saturday, May 28th at 1 p.m. It's the Open Jam for Kids, part of the Hamilton Music Collective. Go to their website and go check it out. Should be on there, all the information, but I just told you as well. And enjoy. You know, go have some fun. Go check it out. Go sign up. Bring your kid, and they'll play with a bunch of music instructors, and they'll have themselves a good time. All right, now, switching gears on Steel City Music, my old buddy Ben Rispin, who I don't think I spoke to, honestly, in a year and a half. You know, like, I haven't seen him. I just haven't seen him. And so we nailed down a Zoom thing, and honestly, we must have talked for 2 hours. Before we even got into the interview, we were just talking about all this other stuff about music, and I'm like, this is like another thing. I just wanted to have a quick chit chat about the Rules album in regards to, you know, over COVID, that sort of thing. How did you market it? How did you do this? And we had so many side track, and both Ben and I get a little sidetrack in this one. And shout out to Halo Recordings. I'm so sorry you had to put up with that band for this length of time. Here's the interview.
Steel City Music.
Howdy, folks. Gonna hear Steel City Music. And after 55 minutes of talking about life, politics, fun, friends, THC levels, how to give advice to younger people coming up in the music industry, or anyone with creative dreams, myself and Ben Rispin have finally decided to chat about Rules.
And we're not going to share any of that potential useful.
Oh, 55 minutes of nothing. You know, it's never making the radio show. Because why? No one cares about me. They don't need to know my opinion about stuff.
Yeah, nobody needs our opinions
on other stuff. But you know what they do want to know about? They want to know about music. They want to know about what's been going on with the band Rules out of Burlington. And of course, this release came out. Has it been a year?
The digital came out last year, March, and then the vinyl came out this year. Like there were so many. We did a pre-order last year, and then there were so many setbacks and all the, you know, global vinyl shortage, so it didn't really get here until March or April of this year. So we kind of had two releases, sort of.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
No, it was actually worked out. Like it prolonged the life cycle of the record a little bit in that regard. You know, we're not really like doing like all the touring and all that kind of stuff. Just sort of.
Would you have been doing say COVID never happened? Geez, don't we wish? And you did put this album out, would you have done the same amount of touring that you would have done 15 years ago?
No. That was never part of the plan for this band. Even with our labels, like they both know that's not really that. We just to build a band, like it's really nice being able to dip into it. Like, you know, sell 100, 200 tickets when you play a show in the area and people like it. And you know, your friends are stoked on something and you manage your budgets properly and you're not sitting thousands of dollars in debt in this little project that when you go out and do something, you make a little bit of money and it's something you're really proud of and you'd have to compromise. You got to write a record on acid with your friends that was just, you know, has the silliest, some of the silliest ideas we've ever been able to put out. So that was kind of all of that's the reason why there's a lot of different kind of projects where you have to focus on, you know, bigger audiences in our world now.
I like that you said that.
Yeah,
wrote an album on acid because before you and I just started talking, you know, yeah, and catching up on everything, I was like, I was sitting here. You caught me when you popped up in the Zoom, and I'm just rocking out over here. And I went, oh, there's someone just, oh, he joined. And I was listening to the album again because I actually have to listen to something two or three times.
Yeah.
Before I do an interview, because I hear something and I forget about it. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I have all these distractions around me. I don't know if I have ADD or it's just normal. I don't know. But I was listening to the tunes and I'm like going, that's stoner rock.
Yeah.
Like that. That's straight up stoner rock. There were some riffs that I was hearing and some bass and I'm going, that's stoner rock. I got to talk to him about that. And then I'm like, oh, I hear Sabbath in this song. And I'm going, wait a minute. Like this band sound to me in my brain was like, this shouldn't sound like that. It should be something else.
The only thing with this band is everybody to bring their best, you know what I mean? There was no like, let's sound like this, let's sound like that, with like a lot of the other bands I've started in my life. And also Chuck writes most of the songs with bass. So Chuck's primarily a guitarist in his life. And so he writes everything with bass. So it ends up being these big kind of riffy things. And like we all like Sabbath. We all like Clutch. We all like you know, we're all like at the heart of it, like early 90s kids. So like a lot of Chuck's influence even comes from like, you know, like I think he said like Porno for Pyros, some Tool and Red Hot mm-hmm. Chili Peppers, but also like a heavy assault of like Dead Kennedys. And like, you know, there's a little bit like the template for the mix was like Deep Purple and Rage Against the Machine, Evil Empire. So like, it was like, it's all kind of in there. And then as well, like there's obviously like Sabbath. There's like, you know, some parts remind me of Sleep. There's definitely nods to Faith No More. So like, and all of those bands like are kind of like, they all take essence in little pieces of stoner rock in their own way. And they're, you know, it's just, there's a lot in it, and it's not intended, but it does, I see why you think that. It's, you know, it's, yeah. It's not like just a straight punk or hardcore record or something like that. You're coming at me with all these problems, got it up on my arm. Tears rolling down your face, need to find a new home.
You handled that question very well, because I know some, and this is like legit. When someone listens to an album and they ask a question about it, as an artist, I know, because I've been questioned on it too. It's like, you got that from this? That's not what we were doing. Like, it's like, that's, yeah, you know, like, because everyone draws their own conclusions or their own pulling out of something. Yeah. And I know some people get offended if you bring it up. You're like, going,
it's in her DNA, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But
like,
I mean,
even Alex. So Alex, like getting him to play drums, like he's from another generation. So he grew up loving, what's the Blink guy? Travis Barker. Like that was his punk guy. Right. So getting him to tone it down, but he still got like, so it's in like, that, and that's an energy from a completely different era, like, you know, yeah. Like 50, and so what, you know, that's in him, like, so it's, yeah, so it's just like, yeah, it just, it turned out to be really cool. And so the first, it was my 40th birthday, or my birthday anyway, and we locked ourselves in Halo, the old Halo above Hollywood, for 3 days. And we had half the record written, and then we wrote the second half that night, and then stayed up all night on acid, and then we started recording at noon. Marconi came back and he's like, shouldn't you guys eat something? And then they started recording, and I guess the take is like, it was recorded like one big 35-minute piece of music, and that was really like the big jammy kind of part of it. There's also a jam thing, like these guys, like they love the jam. There's a lot of stuff in that record that's made up like on the spot. And then so, yeah, I guess the take that was used was the second take through live. So like, it's live off the floor. It's live off the floor as you can get.
Was it intentional to do it live off the floor?
Yeah, because Marconi had just got that crazy. I can't remember what it's called. Oops, it's some darn beep. I can't remember what else I couldn't hear. I can't remember what it's called. It's some crazy analog board, SSL board he shipped up from like.
Beyonce recorded on it.
Yeah, and like Kanye and like Etta James, Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah,
it's like it's done some hits. I think like No Doubt. Did like Tragic Kingdom on it. Like the really cool board. So he was trying to figure that out. And so we wanted to do like this, you know, the most analog thing we could. And so we did. And it's an effing nightmare. I don't think I'll ever do that. Like, actually we said, I'm never doing that again. And now we're going in to record with him again to tape. But that's recording, but it's such a nightmare. Like, because it's so hard. Like compared to like, just, you know, like we used to do the analog stuff back in the day when we first started recording in the 90s, but like we would think, like in other bands, you know, it's so easy now to just demo your ideas, then record a song three times. You want to change something, But with that board, and because we're such assholes, we made it one big 35-minute piece of music. It has to be live mixed down each bounce. So it's not like you can do song for song. He has to do 35 minutes, the whole record. So it was just, it was a very frustrating process.
But with that, it's like you, with digital, it's just like, if you do digital, it's like, okay, there's a mistake there. We can get rid of that. And then we just punch in the new thing.
Yeah.
The other way.
Well, and we could. Yeah. And they couldn't do that with our stuff because, there was so much bleed because it was so live off the floor. So even the drums, like often in production now, like sure you know, but if your listeners don't, like they bring in samples, they find like the best drum tone, like that's the snare. So we couldn't do that because there's so much bleed because it was all live on the floor. So he somehow isolated as much as he could from the drums and then played them back over themselves in the room. And that's how he beefed up the drums. So even the drum samples are just the live thing. Like, I don't know. It's like we're putting out a little mini documentary about it because it actually was quite the feat to have Mark Foley got so much of it done while we were just on like crazy on acid.
I think that's kind of like a tribute to his nature, to be honest, because okay, great that you guys came in as the sacrificial lamb. You were getting something out of it. He needed you guys to like, okay, this is how the board works. I got to figure this out and the best possible thing. So to his nature as a producer, that's awesome. To the fact that he had to be in a room with you guys for that length of time and you're on acid.
We were all kind of cross at him. You should see the footage. We're all like, Marconi's being a dick. And he's like, in the footage back, he's like being the most level headed person, just watching like these four maniacs run around his. I'm sorry, I keep that swear. These four maniacs run around his studio. It's priceless. And a quote is like, do you guys think you should eat something? Like, I was like, what? Screw you. Like, it was a poor guy. But I'm really proud of what we made. And, like, everybody stuck it through. And, we didn't really know what we were making. We all kind of had little ideas. And we're really happy with how it turned out.
you know, I mean, based on what we were just talking about earlier, you have that whole riff rock, you have the Sabbath thing, you have the old school rock that I was hearing in some of it. So like Deep Purple. So it kind of goes with that whole mentality of let's get high and play.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's very much like a jam band, in that regard. So that's how it all started. Like that's how it all, you know, it's not like this crazy. That's how it all started. that's how these 12 songs I wrote on acid with my friends started, Gunner. but yeah, that's very much what it is. It's just as honest as it can be. And those guys like Adam and Chuck are so good at their instruments. Like they can speak their own language and like tell jokes with like licks. It's really, I'm jealous of that, that they have that, but destroy their lives, but I guess I admire that they have that. It's a better.
But you did that album a couple of years ago, and you know, as we said, with COVID, time, digital, vinyl, that kind of things, it must be good for you as someone who's creative to do something like that. It helps you guys in your other bands and your other ventures during in your day job kind of thing. Like, like if you could speak to the still being creative, which makes other things you do even better creative or tolerable.
Yeah. I would say that what I really learned in this is that there's nothing like satisfying yourself on a creative endeavor rather than anybody else. You know what I mean? Like if you're not happy with something, if somebody doesn't like that Rules record, that's like, I'm totally at peace with it. Like, oh, that's fine. You know, it's just not something you like. But if something on other things I've made in the past, whether it's like a video or movie, whatever, it's like I've cut corners, you've saved budget, you know what I mean? There's things you're like, dang, you know, like you really take it to heart. So since then, with just not cutting corners with making it satisfying, making something as good as it should be. And not putting it, you know, like it's taught me a lot of lessons, and it's really, it's also sincere in a way that sincerity translates through the internet now more than ever. That's why like a lot of pop stars have actual substance, I think, now, like the Post Malones have actual substance. So those things combined, satisfying yourself and being sincere with whatever you're making, is definitely how it's going to work going forward for me for the rest of the time.
If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Steel City Music. I'm your host, Gunner, and I'm hanging out with my old friend, Ben Rispin, who we haven't had time to sit down and chat. And I think we've talked for 4 hours now, and we have about maybe 10 minutes for the radio, I think. But, you'll be hearing some songs for our little chitty chat here. Here we are now. COVID's done. I mean, we're hoping it's done. It's no longer a pandemic. It's an epidemic. And things are opening up. People are starting to do shows again. People are starting to feel comfortable going out to venues, that sort of thing. Where does that leave you with this band and other bands? Do you have time or do you feel comfortable enough to, hey, I can go away for 5 days and do a little tour, or I feel that I won't be able to do this tour because of health reasons or ticket reasons?
I think where I am today is I'm comfortable with it, but I think like anything, I like to think pragmatically, and I think if it's going to make sense for everybody, then I would do something. Do you know what I mean? But I just kind of hope we're over with this. Like I took all the precautions needed. I don't want to get in that conversation, but I'm prepared to go forward. I did everything I was asked of by my government, and so I'm prepared to move forward, and I've cooperated the whole way. And I really hope it's over with. It's the best I can say. But it gave me a lot of anxiety when I first started kind of getting out in the world, and now I don't think about it as much. But there's things like I won't, you know, I don't share joints anymore, things like that. You know, I'm always washing my hands. You know, there's things like that I don't mind if somebody else is wearing a mask. Like, I always have them handy. I'll wear it, but I don't generally like think about it. And I don't know if that makes me insensitive. It's more like just I'm forgetful.
Right.
You know, like that kind of thing. So I just kind of, whatever makes everybody else feel comfortable, I'm fine with. Like, I've been lucky enough to dodge it this far. Booster. I'm just kidding. To my conservative friends, I don't even know if it works. I did no research. I didn't get it.
think that the crowds are there for your audience when you want to do, when now that we're moving into summer and then of course people go to festivals and they'll do the patios and they'll do the odd bar show. But once we get closer into the next October, November, is the Rules crowd there like to come out in the winter months? Cause I always got that weird feeling that, and I can't help but get it, that I'm a little fearful of waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, oh, we're going to have to shut her down again. You know?
I don't know. Like there's some weird new, like post COVID, like statistics and concerts that are telling, I guess, in certain ways that like, there's something like across the board, like 30 to 40% of people purchasing tickets aren't showing up. So, and that's at the 200 capacity level, that's at like the, 500,000, that's right up to like Live Nation level. So certain companies, like, I won't say the names or anything like that, but certain companies are overselling because they're trying to like compensate for that. Because let's say, for instance, a sold out show recently at, Bridgeworks, like 100 people didn't show up. That's, on average, those projections are $9 a head for the bar. So that's $1,000, no one's cleaning up. You know what I mean? So like $1,000 that you're kind of projecting to, make on a night like that could be make or break or the only profit that night. Do you know what I mean? Like it's the concert throwing game is such a game of nickel and diming and, just counting, like every dollar counts to get to that bottom, that finish line. So I think that's really interesting and alarming. There's also another weird thing that's like people are having a hard time getting tour buses because all the tour bus drivers quit because nobody was touring. And so they all got other jobs. And then a bunch of these companies sold off their buses. So that's a weird thing. So I don't think we're going to stop seeing the residual fallout of this for quite some time still. And then if we get hit again, like, who knows? Who knows what the variants are, I don't know. I think there's always going to be a certain part of the population that like won't risk something. And there's always going to be a certain part of the population that doesn't care. So I don't know. I think our audience is pretty, if for the Rules audience, to go back to your original question, I think our audience is a pretty thoughtful audience. So I don't know. It's so hard to tell. So I think I don't imagine, thank God it's not my job. Stay the fuck out of my way. Listen up, so this exit. Gonna set this bridge ablaze. Watch it burn and smoke the ashes. Shut up!
looking for a place.
Honestly, I think about this stuff all the time, but I always love asking someone else to talk about it because it's just like
well, it's so heavy. It's so heavy. There's also like what like the idea of like maybe like $30 is the new throwaway. Like that's the new impulse buy throwaway. You know, at the cash register stores, like you know, four, five and under is impulse buy. Like maybe just $30 now because you know it costs $30. Well, in a pandemic, you get a hamburger.
I would be a bald-faced liar if I didn't complain about ticket prices and yet defend them in the same conversation.
Right, right,
you know, because when I see ticket prices for a band and it's just like, oh, it's $35, $39, it's $40, it's $50 in this bar, and you're like, well, wait, what? What's gonna happen? Like, I'm not cheap by any means, but if I'm paying $50. Who's rubbing my feet while I'm watching the band? Like there has to be an intrinsic value, but there's also that back end of the last 2 years of all these costs being thrown in. And especially if everyone's been losing money for 2 years, you got to grab it when you can.
Like, also rock and roll shows have been like $5-$10 since 1977. So I kind of equate it in my head. Like if I'm playing with a bunch of punk bands, like that's why I try to keep the three bands because each band's worth $5. That keeps it in line with like the Fugazi punk thing. So that's a $15 show. Get like that's and I know that doesn't work out all the time, but that's right. I try to keep it in line with that thinking like as much as possible. Then if it's a door split, each band gets $5. You know, like that's kind of how we always do it. Sometimes we get lucky and you know get a nice offer and we're like cha-ching. But that's if we're doing it mostly for like something that we're putting together. That's generally how we run it to try to keep it. Like we'll ask a little bit more, but like I mean, like especially now, like you know, gas is $2 a liter. You know,
209 today. It may be 215 by the time people hear this.
Or yeah, more. Yeah. It's a big ask to get these. Like you know, give a band $100. Like to like. It's tough. It's tough.
That's why I have all these conversations with my friends and it kind of doesn't jive with what you just said about the Fugazi mentality, which I agree with, but you want to put on a big show?
The balance of it all. You know what I mean? Like
you got to bring a sponsor in, right? Yeah. It's like someone needs to pick up the tab on things that, you know, promotion, marketing, you know, and making sure that the venue doesn't take it to a hit on a show. Right. So whenever I see a high ticket price, I'm like going, I need my sponsor in there in order for me to feel okay if I was a promoter.
Oh yeah, for sure. And that stuff. But then a lot of them, like, you know, like you always get the, like, you know, booth sponsor can give liquid, no problem, but no cash. And we like, it's not easy. It's like rock and roll, like it's especially on the DIY level, like on any level, it's not an easy bracket.
Yeah.
make sure you're having a good time. Like, I guess it's
like I said before the interview, it's the serotonin levels we're looking at. That's what we need. Yeah. You know, you got to be happy with what you do. Hey, man, thanks for taking time to have the chitty chat with me. I know you got another interview you got to get to in about 10 minutes.
No, a work meeting, not an interview. I wish.
Well,
not a wish.
I was trying to pump you up. Like people were like, you know.
This old rules press junket's never ending.
I know. I know.
I got to tell a lot of people I like acid today, Kenner.
I know Rolling Stone wants to write an article about you and wrong information and to make everyone feel bad.
Okay. Did you see Andrea Hunter from Town got published in Rolling Stone, the photographer?
I just heard about that the other day.
Yeah, that's so cool. Anyway, so she's awesome. But that's
you know what? There's another person I should be chatting with.
Yeah, she's killing it. And Paul. They're great. Anyway.
That's awesome. Hey, man, thanks for the chitty chat time. And how does everyone find Rules online?
Everything is at Rules Are a Band.
That's it?
Yep, at Rules Are a Band across the board.
We can find you on Spotify, Deezer.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure everything.
Every social media platform. Well, thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay.
No problem. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for taking the time, man. It was so nice to catch up with you, too, before this. And then,
I know. And the next time we chat, it'll be in the summertime. And, as a closer, just to let you know, I've already started to pressure Lou Molinaro to have you come on his radio show with Manolis.
I really offended. Like, I kind of got fired from that show. Well, because me and Manolis kind of fell in love on that, right? Manolis like once a week on the radio. That's how
I know. I don't imagine it. I listened to it.
I'm like, who is this guy?
I loved it. I loved the two of you guys spooning on air.
Yeah,
I thought it was nice. I thought it was like how you two, I thought you guys branched off into something real, you know, and I think Lou doesn't understand how good you guys, that was a whole other show. That would have been great.
Maybe because Lou's got a really good show. Maybe the four of us should get out and do something. That would be a good time.
Well, try fighting for some mic time on that, bud.
Yeah. I just laugh at Manolis.
I know. He's always doing something incredibly insane, and he doesn't know he's doing insane, and he's fumbling.
He got us in trouble with Jamie Tennant because he did Tennant's like the nicest dude on the planet.
I know,
because Manolis got so excited about Footloose that he ran through all the radio stations like just papers flying. It was one of the best things.
Jamie's a very forgiving guy. He'll let.
He's
a wonderful dude. Trust me. I've known him since I was 6 years of age. So yeah, it's okay.
He's been really supportive of the Rolls record too.
He's a great guy over at CFMU. Okay, buddy. Thanks for everything.
Thank you so much. See you. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay. And interview ends there. And I will put songs in between all of that stuff. Okay.
Awesome, dude. Thanks so much. I love you, buddy. See you too.
for alternative. You're listening to Indie 101.5 CIOI.
Steel City Music.